Vimy Ridge resident and Bega Valley Shire councillor Jo Dodds strongly believes that climate change is at play in her community. She points to the bushfires of March 18 that ripped through her community. Her appeal to the Prime Minister in the week after those flames captured the attention of author, environmentalist and co-founder of the global change agent 350.org, Bill McKibben. Mr. McKibben invited Jo to be a speaker on his fossil-free acceleration tour, which took in Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, Adelaide and Newcastle in April and May of this year. Jo called on leaders to act now to reduce the risks of further climate change, as I suspect she will do again today, advocating as she does for regional communities. Please welcome Jo Dodds.
First, I want to acknowledge the country of the Yuin Nation where we meet here today and the Aboriginal elders past and present and those to come who've kept this place and held it and been held by it, known it deeply and cared for it for thousands, tens of thousands of years. And I also want to acknowledge councillors Liz Seckold and Sharon Tapscott and Kathy Griff, who's another climate warrior. Like others, I'm going to have to read from my notes because it'll keep me on track. It also means I'll have to wear my reading glasses, which means I can't really see you that well, and that allows me to maintain the delusion that you are all naked. I was very honoured when Ian Everywhere Campbell invited me to talk here about the Tathra, Vimy Ridge and Reedy Swamp fires at the Festival of Open Minds, but since he invited me, well, it's been pretty hard to keep up. The gold posts on renewable energy keep shifting. We still have a fire burning at Yankees Gap that's now taken out over 13,000 hectares of forest and three homes, and we've seen Canberra bicker while our valley burns again. Driving home from Canberra on the day the federal government entirely abandoned the National Energy Guarantee, I passed through snow at the top of the Brown Mountain and bushfire at the bottom, and I cried, because on our current trajectory, things are only going to get worse. But why am I here? Because I've recently been at the pointy end of climate change, and I'm tired, and I'm pissed off. I'm tired of leaders who don't care enough about us and about this planet to risk their jobs. I've had enough of waiting. I've had enough of being quiet. Had enough of watching the temperature go up and up and up and not hearing alarm bells. And I want to admit something to you right here and now, and it's quite shameful, that I was elected nearly 2 years ago as a councillor to represent this shire, and until March the 18th, I'd barely said boo about climate change. Not any longer. So here's my story of March 18 and what happened after that. I live in the hills behind Tathra at the ocean end of Vimy Ridge Road. And as you know, we had a big fire some 5 months ago, and I'm here today, still keenly aware of the pain of the friends who lost everything but their lives. I want to share my experience with you because watching the homes of your friends burn down kind of sharpens the mind, and it forces you to see some things that you might not have wanted to. We live in an amazing place. We have musicians and artists, farmers and entrepreneurs, great food and coffee. But the biggest draw card for visitors and for those of us who've moved here from elsewhere is our natural environment. We've got pristine beaches and aquifers full of clean water, forests and rivers. We've got fertile farmlands, world-class oyster producers, and sacred mountains watching over us. Even in drought, it's a beautiful place. About 12 years ago, though, we had a stupidly hot New Year's Day. It was so hot you couldn't cross the sand to the beach. Friends without aircon spent the day under a bridge near the river just to stay cool. And my friend Matthew Knott read Tim Flannery's The Weathermakers. He was so alarmed by the confluence of that book and that heat that he decided to act. Matt invited the community to help form a human sign on Tathra Beach. Many of you might have been up there in that sign. Now, the town's only got a population of around 1,600 people, but on that day we had over 3,000 people on the beach, and we formed two signs, Clean Energy for Eternity and then Imagine. And that was so good, we then built Imagine out of solar panels, which now power the sewage treatment works. We wanted the government to take notice, to sign the Kyoto Protocol, and to invest in renewable energies like solar, wind, geothermal and wave energy. And we formed the community group Clean Energy for Eternity. Since that day, Clean Energy for Eternity's raised tens of thousands of dollars and led the way by installing solar panels on surf life-saving clubs throughout New South Wales and beyond. We've also put solar onto every community building in Tathra, onto schools, community halls, rural fire service sheds and more. We've encouraged other communities to join in and to raise awareness and money and solar energy to their rooftops. We've got 50-50 by 2020 emblazoned on our water towers, and many cars in the Shire still proudly sport a 50-50 by 2020 bumper sticker. It's been bloody awesome. But then on March 18th this year, something happened that we didn't deserve. And before I continue, I'm conscious that many of you here today may have gone through that fire or other fires and been impacted. And there are people today in this room who lost their homes, so do look after yourself, because I'm going to be showing some images of the fire that are compiled from the internet, and it may be traumatic. At around 12:30 p.m, a bushfire started on a hill at the end of my road. By 6 p.m, 70 homes were gone. It was a catastrophe of unprecedented proportions for our town, and it was also a miracle in that no human lives were lost, but whole streets are gone, and many of us are still in shock. I was on my way back home from 3 nights away when I got the news of fires starting in the Shire, so I drove straight to Mogarika and waited. My partner Tony tore home and set up hoses and sprinklers around our house. He threw the doormats out into the open grass. He started the water pumps, grabbed the dog, and evacuated to join me at the boat ramp. We parked in the big car park where it felt safe because the river's wide and deep. We could see our home upriver, nestled low in the forest, and we could see the soaring plumes of smoke straight ahead. They became a great wall of smoke, thickening and widening with so many beautiful colours, dense grey, cloud white, lit with pink and orange from within. This was the forest burning. At intervals, sudden columns of black smoke rose up, and each black column was the end of a car, a shed, or a home. I hoped that my neighbours had escaped in time as I watched the black smoke rise from their homes. But the fire had also leaped across the hills and into Tathra. There were many more black columns. A string of cars appeared out of the smoke and came over the bridge. I saw a four-wheel drive so packed with people that they were pressed to the windows. Another vehicle towed a large open boat, and in the boat sat adults and children, their faces slack with shock. These people were fleeing from something so awful, they were prepared to put their children in a boat being towed on the open road. The horror of what all refugees go through was suddenly there in my town, and these people, these refugees, were my community. The wind was a blowtorch that made the river rise in waves which chopped against the riverbank. 30 or 40 people gathered in the car park. We watched the growing towers of smoke, we checked our phones, we talked and paced and hoped. The adrenaline was extreme. I watched my little home in the distance, inside it, everything I own. I thought of my journals, the thing that most defines me. They've made me a writer. They're the stories, the records of my life, of my friends and family, all the things we've endured and struggled with, all the reckoning and resolution that I've sweated on. And all I could think is, I've worked out so much of my shit in those books. If they burn, what do I do then? Who will I be without my stories? And I thought of all the other history. My great-grandmother's clock, the gold and ruby ring that belonged to my grandma, the photos, the poetry, the letters and tea sets and recipes, the old buttons, the favourite dress, the paintings and shoes, and pot plants, and rugs, and books, and the journals, the bloody journals. These are the things which locate us, which are the memory aids, the proof of life. They're just things, sure. But to lose it all in one go is to lose your compass. In the end, Tony and I were crazy lucky. The fire reached our property. I got ready to lose everything. I walked into the river and I actually prayed a Buddhist prayer. But yep, I prayed. The water bomber planes roared overhead and dumped one load on the fire behind our house and then sped off to help Tathra. And then the forecasted cool change came and the smoke settled. We waited about 30 minutes and then we crept home to our perfect little house. But 70 homes and 30 cabins and caravans and many more sheds and cars were lost. My friend Yani lost her home. She had time to pack her daughter's precious things, but little time for her own. She lost all of her writing and musings, her academic work, her recollections. She lost her photographic portfolio and all of her photo albums, her thousands of books, artworks, ceramics, and the mementos and collections of a lifetime, of her parents and grandparents included. She ran barefoot from the fire as it rose above her home, and by evening it was just a pile of twisted tin. My neighbours, Jan and John, they lost their home. They had a collection of family antiques, original artworks, and a fantastic collection of anodised aluminium cups and jugs and pots. In a rambling mud brick house where they've hosted many legendary dinner parties, they left with nothing. Jan told me that every day now she thinks of reaching for this familiar thing or that, that she used to own, and then she cries again. John tells me that he has no work history now. It's just charred sheaves in a warped filing cabinet. And their son, Evan, he can hardly talk about losing his grandfather's watch. That night, I watched the Prime Minister, Turnbull, if you need reminding of who was in power then, on the telly, speaking during his visit to the evacuation centre. He looked stricken, but then he was about to get his 30th negative news poll, and he had his own firestorm brewing back in the party room. And here's what he said, partly in response to Greens leader Richard Di Natale's observation that the Tathra fire was a climate change-related event. This is not the time to politicise a disaster like this. And you can't attribute any particular event, whether it's a flood or fire, or it's a drought or a storm, to climate change. We are the land of droughts and flooding rains. We're the land of bushfires. Nature hurls her worst at Australians and has for always and always will. I went to bed. At 4:45 in the pitch dark, I woke up with the words "and always will" ringing in my head. What the hell did the Prime Minister think he was doing coming to Tathra, to my town, to a town that's fought so hard and given so much already to fighting climate change? What did he think he was doing to come here and save that? The Prime Minister had not just joined the queue of people who quote poet Dorothea McKellar as if she's some kind of anti-climate science clairvoyant, but he'd also condemned us to doing nothing to prevent the next fire and the one after that, to preventing fires that will come hotter and harder and more frequently and that will surely kill people. This is about climate change, not bush poetry, because our fire didn't happen in mid-summer. It happened in mid-bloody March. There were 10 other fires in the valley that day, and Sydney and Bega broke the records with their hottest ever March day. By sunrise, I'd sent angry letters to editors of local and state newspapers. Then I grabbed my dog and went into the forest behind our house, where the fire burned hot and hard and all of my landmarks have gone. I propped my iPhone on a tree branch and started filming, and I absolutely gave it to the Prime Minister. I called him out for ignoring the reason for our devastation, and I offered to support if he chose to stand up and be honest about what happened and why. When I finished recording, I took the phone back out of the tree and looked at the dog, and I could see him thinking, "I don't know what that tree did, but it's in big trouble." I uploaded that raw little Facebook message to Facebook, where it quickly gathered over 26,000 views, and I only have about 600 friends on Facebook. And it catapulted me into the front line of debate about climate disasters and the cause, the mining and use of fossil fuels such as coal and gas. And if you want to search for it, it's under Tathra Fires, Joe Dodds on YouTube. After my pleas for action went public, some people suggested that I had no right as a councillor to speak out about this issue. They were angry at the attention I'd drawn to the reason for the fire. Now was not the time, they said. So what's going on here? Why couldn't I talk about climate change right there and then, while my boots were covered in ash and my clothes smelled of smoke? If this fire had been started by an arsonist, we would have been discussing that publicly from the moment it was known. There would have been anger and demands for justice. But when it's the fossil fuel industries, the major contributors to climate destruction, who are responsible for the losses of homes, livelihoods and lives across the world, we're not supposed to talk about it. We have to be vigilant about understanding the forces which work to deny us this critical conversation. We must think for ourselves and demand answers about why we are facing these escalating risks. When you stand in front of the reality of a hotter, drier, windier Australia, when you see it consume the homes of your friends, I don't think you have a right. I think you have a moral responsibility to speak up. And to anyone who says it's too soon, well, I'm not the only one who thought that that's a bit like the NRA telling young Americans that the day after a school shooting is not the time to talk about gun control. Greece has been rocked by the deaths of 91 people in recent fires. There have been unprecedented fires in the Arctic Circle. California is now facing the reality that there is no fire season. They've had bushfires in every single month for over a year. Traditionally, the Northern and Southern Hemisphere firefighters have assisted each other throughout the alternating seasons. This won't be possible in the new climate of year-long fire seasons. And now, in winter, well, spring today, our valley is on fire again. This generation, us, we are the privileged few who sit at the fulcrum of the greatest change humankind will ever wreak on this planet. We hold in our hands the lever that will direct us, will direct our children and grandchildren, will direct every living form on this planet towards destruction or away from it. Only we in all of human history have this responsibility. It can't be handed on to the next generation or blamed onto the last. We have in our hands the responsibility and the power to make the call. Do we use the technology and the systems that will lead us away from carbon-based energy and economy, will pull us back from the tipping point? Or do we continue on our current course? If we don't pull now, with everything we've got, we are agreeing to a future of droughts that never end, of annual rainfalls that descend in one or two destructive events, of bushfires that rage through every season of the year. We are it. There is no one else who can do this, but we can. Personally, I'll keep asking for meetings with government leaders of all stripes. My federal member, Dr. Mike Kelly, and I met a couple of months ago, and he gave me great hope with his plans for renewables in our region. He gets it. I'll keep bringing news from the front line of climate change. I'll tell people how it feels when it's your home in the firing line or your family running from the fire. And I'll stand by any leader who realises that good leadership is not about popularity. It's about figuring out what is the right thing to do and then doing everything in your power to make it happen. I'll finish with this. Raise your voices, my friends. Be audacious. Contact your political representatives and tell them what you want and what you don't want. Write them an email. Ask for a meeting. You'd be surprised how effective a face-to-face can be. And do the same with your bank and your super provider. Who's got a superannuation investment? Do you know where your money's invested? If you don't know, then some of your money is quite likely invested in the fossil fuel industry. If just 7.7% of us moved our super out of fossil fuels and into renewables, we'd reach the 100% renewable target by 2030. 7.7%. It's your money working there. Make sure that your biggest investment, apart from your house, isn't funding the sort of climate destruction that will burn that house down. And before you switch funds, ask your original fund or your bank if they think it's okay to see houses burning. Let them know why you're leaving. If you want to do more, have a word to me after this or contact me at council. And that's all you've got for homework. We live in a democracy. We have kept the law, capitalism, passion and activism in our toolkits. So remember, let's use it and be useful and beautiful things like my friends Nick and Jane and my dad. Thank you.